Welcome back, your listeners, to the Dish with Dina podcast. I'm so happy to have you join us again. Today, my guest is Christy Ruth, another fellow registered dietitian. Christy is a West Coast transplant now based out of Pennsylvania, and we dish about how eating and cooking nutritious food at home doesn't have to be complicated. This is a perfect tie-in to this week's wellness topic of Every Kid Healthy. April has many awareness topics, and Every Kid Healthy Week shines a spotlight on the actions that schools and families are taking to improve the health and wellness of their children, along with encouraging emotional wellness and physical activity. So sit back, enjoy the conversation, and let's dish. Welcome, Christy Ruth, to the Dish with Dina podcast. Thank you so much for spending time with me today. How is life treating you?
It's great. We have a snow day today, so outside it's just gorgeous, and we have the fire going, and yeah, I can't complain.
It's a snowy, wintry day. You are on the East Coast like I am. We did not get what we were expecting to get. How much snow ended up by you?
Oh, you know, I'm not exactly sure, but at least a couple inches.
Oh, okay.
Definitely a good coating, but I would say a couple inches.
Mine, everybody went into panic mode in New York City. They transitioned to, you know, pivoted to remote learning in the schools, and
yeah, same.
Barely a dusting outside. Whatever, it's fine. But this is rare. We don't really get a lot of snow anymore these days, so this is kind of fun to see it out there.
Yeah.
Christy, I want to go back for a second just because you, along with so many of my current recent guests, have been so generous with accepting my request about coming on here to be a podcast guest. But you and I do share a commonality of being dietitians, so I appreciate that. And I want to find out a little bit about, how did you even get started in this profession? How long have you been a dietitian? What drew you into this industry?
Okay, so I have to say, I never knew what a dietitian was. I had heard of it growing up, but didn't realize you could go to school to be one. So my dream when I was little was to be a pediatrician, actually. And then as I got older and went to college, I was started out as a biology major. I took a nutrition class because I've always been interested in nutrition, but didn't know you can major in it. So the adjunct professor was the local dietitian, and I'm like, what? You know, started asking her questions and went on a hunt. My school didn't have that major, so I found a school close by so I could keep my friends and transfer to change my major to nutrition, and didn't look back. So, and actually, I have been a registered dietitian for 20 years. This is my 20th, like I was 20 years in September. So, yeah.
Wow. My mouth is agape. As most people know, this podcast is an audio and video format. So if you're listening to this right now, my mouth is agape. 20 years is a long time to be doing anything. And I know when you shared with me some of our pre-interview discussions, you told me that you loved your job and you always would. So that's really nice to know that it still brings you joy. It still makes you excited. And because it's the science field, you know, I'm also assuming we learn a lot as we go, and you're very open and flexible to, you know, picking up new information or however it is that you're approaching your career, which we'll talk a little bit about in a sec. But I scribbled down here because you're not the first one, and myself included, that I'm like, what's a dietitian? That's a thing. And it's funny, but not funny, because, you know, being one, we want people to recognize the value of having us as part of your healthcare team, and that some people might think we only do things like make a salad. But can you share a little bit about some of your original background of where kind of you started and where you are now?
Yeah, so I actually dove right into critical care nutrition. My internship, I had asked for it to be focused in critical care nutrition. So I really lucked out with my first job. I was looking for a job. I'm not from Pennsylvania. I'm actually from Arizona, but married into Pennsylvania, and was looking for a job when we first got married. And I met with a woman I had met, was a dietitian at a local hospital system. She was outpatient dietitian, and I was just telling her what my interests were. And she's like, you know what, our health system has an opening in the burn center. And I thought, well, I'm not qualified. I'm right out of my internship, you know? And so she's like, apply anyways. It's been open for probably a year. And so I did, and it was advertised as a level 3 position. But I thought, well, what's the worst case scenario? They're going to say no, you know, so I gave it a shot, and I was hired as an entry level, you know, with the understanding that I'll get trained into it. So that's a lot of a big piece of advice I give to younger people pursuing their career is to apply anyways. You know, if it's something you're interested in, you never know, and be willing to learn. And so that is how my initial career got started. And then I worked there for about 2 years and decided I needed to either get my master's, go to school to get my master's, or get more experience somewhere else. And so I got a job at Jefferson Health System in Philadelphia and decided to commute down there and get more experience. And I did, and it was a wonderful experience. And then went back to my original place of employment. So another lesson is never burn bridges, always leave on good terms. And they rehired me after we had our first daughter, and I went part-time, and I was there for another 15 years. Excuse me. So I would say 17 out of 19 years of inpatient work, I was at the same hospital. So, and I, but my, what I was responsible for blossomed. So I started out with adult critical care nutrition, and then I added pediatric critical care nutrition. And then after about 8 years, I added neonatal intensive care unit also, which most dietitians are either pediatric or adult or neonatal. I considered myself in the hospital setting a critical care dietitian for all ages and loved every minute of it. So, and here I am blogging now with my own recipe website, totally different.
I know, I want to talk about the shift in that, because you have children of your own. You've been around children of, again, varying age ranges. The pediatric population, as I do tend to define, I teach life cycle nutrition, and we've defined that in some of the podcast episodes too. Anywhere from 0 to 20 is considered pediatrics on like the growth chart of things. And you've really touched a little bit of everything there, of being able to be in that inpatient or the critical care population, and then coming out of that now with your own family, and then focusing, which we'll talk about shortly, of creating kind of like a resource and guidance for people who are just busy people who have families to take care of. What is it about what maybe you did learn? Because everybody might have a different experience of how they are raising their children or whatever potential situations might be involved, whether it's neurodivergence or special needs or food preferences and allergies. What things, skills, knowledge did you take away from those critical care years that now have made you go into this new direction of what you're doing?
You know, there's different situations that I've come across over the years with in the pediatric population and adult population that opened my eyes to things that I don't think I would see in the outpatient setting, because we do have the care team there. So for example, a case manager might shed light on something that a parent might not mention in a one-on-one meeting, or a patient, I walk in and a teenager is in the room and the parents had stepped out and I'm talking to them, and maybe they're sharing something they wouldn't have if they're parents were in the room. And so for instance, there was one teenage girl who they were considered might have an eating disorder, and the more I spoke to her, I realized that actually I think what was happening is she was eating by herself, and so she didn't have much of an appetite, and therefore she wasn't eating. And also she had a brother with celiac disease, and the mom was a single parent trying to make it work, and so she was losing weight, and they were thinking it was eating disorder, but actually, I mean, yes, it was disordered eating, but it was not a traditional eating disorder. And so to be able to shed light on that for the family, that I don't know that that picture would have been had in an outpatient setting. So that's just one example. I have so many different ones that have just opened my eyes to what people actually have access to compared to what they might share with you one-on-one. And then as far as allergies go too, you know, is it an allergy? Is it an intolerance? Is it this? Is it that? You know, and so that has to be, I have to say, it's a little tricky than writing recipes for people, because there's so many nuances and so many exceptions and so many ways a word can be interpreted that makes it tricky, because that piece is missing that you can explain yourself in person. For example, too, with my recipes, I really have made it a mission to not title a recipe as healthy, because one could be a trigger word for disordered eating. And also it means something different to so many people. You know, somebody could have a digestive problem that a fiber actually is not recommended for them. So it turns out this recipe I'm saying is healthy actually isn't for them, and things like that. It does make it harder to have my recipes be found by people, you know, because often people use the word healthy in searching for recipes, but that has been a decision I've made. You might see the word as far as part of a healthy diet or healthy or explaining it a little bit like that. But the hospital system has really opened my eyes almost in a paralyzing way to how long people live, how much time people have to cook, how the interest level of cooking, how they interpret things like nutrition facts labels, how they implement diets at home. I could go on forever, but the hospital really has opened my eyes. And I encourage everybody actually who's a new student who's not interested in clinical to work clinical, at least some, because there you see the whole gamut and you get the real life situation of people, including people who you find out live in a hotel with a tiny little refrigerator. I could go on with so many situations, but I'll stop talking there.
I think this is really wonderful because I've been a dietitian for almost 8 years now, but I think what I've come to see is this nuanced language and the acceptance of understanding more diversity in the way that we discuss things and meet with our patients and clients. And also, I hope for anybody who's out there who does have some coexisting conditions or might be a little bit sensitive to some things, I hope that whoever you're working with in your healthcare system and your healthcare providers is making you feel comfortable with being able to share language with them. Because as Christy, like you were saying, sometimes somebody has to be out of the room or you need to know what questions to ask. And, not to get on a soapbox about American healthcare, but sometimes it's about numbers and turning over things, and reimbursement takes a part of that too. And so we don't necessarily get to spend enough time getting to learn about people in certain situations. Even in the outpatient setting, sometimes it's just like 15 minutes, 30 minutes and gone, and you might not see them come back again. And you're hoping that whatever you shared with them, they're going to take home and implement. But you mentioned too, right, the access to whatever they can afford or the location, you talked to about the word healthy, which I am starting to understand that too. Like my students and I, when I teach in school, I try to ask them, what's your definition of it? It's not a universal language. Even if you say something like the absence of disease. So just like you mentioned, okay, so if I have an allergy, that's technically a condition that I'm managing. So does that make me all of a sudden unhealthy? And the food that I'm eating is catering to that. So again, the language that we're using to make people feel like they're being supported and not outcasted in that way, I think is really helpful. You also mentioned the approach that you're taking now with developing recipes and the blogging. So share with us a little bit about the expertise that you're implementing there, and maybe also how you are trying to reach people and how to make that a resource for people and who your target audience also is.
Yeah, sure. So I would say it's probably been 5 years now that I would get in conversation with people at, say, sporting events about, I started talking about being a dietitian. I should say that I didn't used to tell people what I did because I didn't want people to think I was judging them. I didn't want all of that. But I was like, you know what, how am I ever going to help anybody if I don't let them know what I do for a living? So we would get in dialogue, and a lot of people do like to cook actually, or are interested in nutrition. They just don't know how to interpret everything. So I got a lot of good conversations, and I would say it was within a month span that three different people totally unrelated to each other were like, you got to start a food blog. You need to start a food blog. And I'm like, what? And I was working inpatient at this time. And so I was finally, and then our contract was up. So I worked for a contract company, and that was kind of what I needed, I think you could say, to take a step in doing something a little bit different. I had about a 45-minute commute for a long time, minimum, some days hour or more. And I thought, you know what, if we lose our contract, this is what I like to do. And I would want to be at a large teaching hospital, and I don't want to drive any further. So let me get this started. And I was connected with one of the friends who had suggested it. Somebody she knows well is a successful food blogger. So she got me in touch with her to just talk about it. Cause I will admit, I never followed a food blog. I didn't spend time on social media following recipes like that. Just, I did love to cook, but technology wasn't my thing. And I never followed food blogs. So I didn't really know what I was in for, which is actually a good thing, I think, at this point. So I talked to her about it. She totally encouraged me to do it, but I went totally blind. So I thought, you know what? I'm just going to start. Nobody needs to find me right away. Let's see how this goes. And then over again, I kept getting encouragement. Friends would ask, I want to see what's in your cabinet. I'm like, well, it's no secret. Come look at my cabinet. I don't cook with any special, ingredient that you've never heard of or anything like that. I just, my passion is to keep things simple. And I think everybody knew I was commuting, a working mom, kids in sports, and I fed my family. And so, but I didn't have a lot of time and I was figuring it out. And so I think a lot of people were wondering, what are you doing? You know, how are you doing this? And so, with that feedback, I started writing down my recipes, I guess you could say, and publishing them and creating my website. And it's been a very long process because of the amount of time I'm able to put into it and because of my huge learning curve, because technology is not my friend, but I'm doing it very slowly but surely. And so that's kind of how it got started. And then I would say after about 20 posts or so, I realized, you know what, how's anybody going to find this, you know, if I'm just putting recipes out? So I learned even more about search engine optimization. And then I thought, okay, so they're finding a recipe. Well, how am I actually going to teach them anything? You know, and so I started adding a nutrition tip section to my recipe posts, or I call it a dietitian tip section is what I call it, with little tidbits related to the recipe or food exposure or fiber or things like that. So I started there because websites are free as long as you have the internet accessible to anybody before venturing out to doing one-on-one counseling or anything else like that.
Well, you have a lot to offer because I took a look at your blog and your website already. I think it's fantastic, but you're so right. It's time consuming to create meals, generate recipes, write about things, include that separate part of it too, with like putting in an educational or informational component, and then to throw in, you know, every whatever 2 to 5 years, the internet decides to change things up. So there's different laws to abide by and things that may or may not reach to. And so this thing that Christy, you were just saying with search engine optimization, you know, that feels like very competitive. Like, are we doing correct things? Just out of curiosity, only because I started working on some of this on my end using some AI stuff, like help me figure out some SEO optimization things. Are you figuring everything out on your own, or can you run it through some sort of software program to help you with maybe the recipe names or alternating, you know, some kind of keywords in there to help you get a better reach? Because it's fascinating, the technology that exists out there, but sometimes it can be a little scary too.
It is scary. So I use for recipe titles, I primarily use KeySearch. It's a keyword research tool. It's actually very affordable compared to a lot of other tools out there, especially if you get on one of their deals like Black Friday. And then I recently, I would say 2 months ago, finally bit the bullet and signed up for Rank IQ. And I really like it because it tells you, there are a lot of words, I should say, grades your, what it does is it grades your post, like similar to a report card. And tells you words that you should try to include in it. And I used to be resistant to things like that because I wanted to do the writing. I wanted it to be my language. But as I read their suggestions, I thought, well, this is the same thing. It's just wording it different, you know, or switching around the words or something like that, where essentially I was saying the same thing. So that actually really helped for me. I have to wait and see a few more months to see if it's effective, but I think it will be, because I definitely can see at the end how that will help, especially because it's recommended to write, you know, your posts in a lower rating level, I guess you could say. And this one SEO guru, his name is Casey Markey, he'll say to write posts as if they're to be read by a toddler or a drunk adult, like very simple. That's his analogy. And so it's one thing to keep in mind as you're typing, and it's another thing to have a resource like that to kind of help you reword things to make it easier for people to understand. So I do use those tools.
And I ask this because, number one, I like nerding out on software and technology. Mm-hmm. I find it very useful, especially when you have so much going on. Your time is really valuable. So if you can kind of get an assistant in some way, whether it's a virtual assistant in that form or not, it's super helpful. But then also because, again, taking into account any listeners who might be searching things, this is what you're coming across, right? Like, you are more than likely typing in some very generic language in your search bar, and you're probably only finding the things or looking at literally the things that are what are known as like above the fold, meaning the things that pop up first. And especially if you're using a large search engine like Google, they'll sometimes do sponsored ads and people who can pay for things. But then as you go through a little bit more, like I really do encourage everybody, click through and just give some love to some people on the other kinds of pages, because we are putting so much effort and energy into what we're sharing, but we might not be found somewhat organically, at least in the beginning. Once things pick up, then maybe that's a different story. Just a quick fun fact.
Sorry, I just want to interject while you're saying that, to also rate the recipes 5 stars and or comment, because it gives it a little bit of juice for Google then to or whatever search engine to then share it with and on somebody else's feed. That's huge.
So important for everything. Yeah. Like you have engagement in that sense. It's not just views, but actually people who are saying thank you. And also it helps with you and us knowing what we could improve upon, what we might want to do a little bit differently and better the next time. So I love that advice. I wanted to share, so Dish with Dina, which is kind of like my brand name across all social media platforms, actually started back in, oh gosh, at this point, I want to say 2003, maybe, as the Daily Dish with Dina on Blogspot, back when Blogger was like the landing page and website for food bloggers. And that's what I did in the beginning, Christy. I was kind of teaching recipes. I was kind of cooking. I was also doing a lot of eating out. So I was like rating and reviewing restaurants at the time. And it's so weird to me that now, as I've switched into a second career and dietetics is my new profession, that I don't cook at all as much ever as I used to. I really, it's not that I've lost the passion. It's just a variety of different things that I've kind of gotten detached from it. So let me go back and ask you first about the dynamic in your home, right? Obviously, you're a dietitian, mm-hmm. you have this background, but this is also something that you, I would hope, enjoy doing, that you're sitting there mm-hmm. in your kitchen creating these recipes. Is your family testing things out? Are you getting feedback from them too? Because we talked a little bit about your children's age ranges, that it's pretty, you know, there's a lot of different things going on between the ages of currently 9 and 16. So share with us a little bit about what takes place behind the scenes.
Yeah, they are my probably biggest critics and also best cheerleaders, I guess you could say. So I have a 9-year-old who is my pickiest eater, and I have a 14-year-old son who is a basketball player. He's a freshman in high school. And then I have a 16-year-old daughter who's a junior soccer player now with her license. And she also is recovering from ACL injury, so, and reconstructive surgery. So I have that to add to my level of experience, I guess you could say too. A lot of my recipes, absolutely. I will not post a recipe if we have not tried it. And if they do not like it, I will not post it, or I will try again, you know, and that's where some of my tips even come from. For example, one of my recent posts is a tofu smoothie, blueberry smoothie made with tofu. And I don't typically cook a lot with tofu. I do sometimes, but not as a complete substitution of things. And so, for example, my son, I said, here, do you want to try this smoothie? You know, there's protein in it, because that speaks his language. I didn't tell him the source, but he insisted on knowing the source. And he does like to cook himself. And he was not going to try it until I tell him. So I tell him, and he didn't even try it yet. And he's like, oh, that's so gross. You know, how could you do that to a smoothie? I'm like, oh my goodness, you need to just try it first. Then my 16-year-old comes home a little bit later, and I'm like, oh, here, I have this smoothie. She's like, oh, thanks. Oh, this is really good. She didn't ask what was in it. So yeah, I'm not about hiding things, but I do, if you're going to try something new, I do think you should tell them ahead of time. And that's just one example. So that's where a lot of my tips come from, actually, or my kids, or ways I've modified it, because there are, the flavor palettes too are so different. And it also is affirming to me that not everybody's going to love every recipe I put out. I don't love every recipe people put out in restaurants. You know, that's why there are a variety when you go to a restaurant. But also observing my kids at restaurants and their friends has been a reminder to me of how simple it's okay to keep things simple. I mean, what, they order pizza, mac and cheese, a Caesar salad. I mean, they're not ordering the gourmet, whatever, full of flavor. My son does like spicy things, so he and my husband will add Tabasco sauce and things like that. But I have a daughter who doesn't like spice, can't really tolerate it, and I have reflux. So to me, that I'll do that, you know, make something on the mild side, then they can add spice. So yeah, over time, absolutely, with their, and sometimes it's their suggestions, you know, can you do this to it to make it different? Okay. You know, and either I'll add it as a recipe variation, or I'll just recreate the recipe with their suggestions. And I know I shared with you too, one of my passions is breakfast, you know, with teenagers, not just, I mean, yes, athletes, but also just teenagers in general, and the lunch, I mean, just eating patterns in general, because even, you know, some people will be like, you still pack lunch for your kids? I mean, they're teenagers. Can't they pack their own lunches? And they want me to pack their lunches most of the time. And they're fine with leftovers. They're fine with keeping it simple. So the strategy I do, because sometimes they're some days they're hungrier than other days, I pack their main, whether it's a sandwich, a wrap, leftovers. I'll tell them, you know, here's your thermos, this is the leftover. And then I'll have like a fruit and a veggie for them to grab. And then they add, I call lunchbox snacks, like they add things that are probably non-perishable so that if they're not hungry, they're not wasted. And if they're hungry, they eat them. So that's kind of my strategy with that. And then when I share with them, what do the other kids eat at school? You know, you're going to start making your lunch, you know, if I feel like they're ungrateful or something. And they're like, they don't, mom. A lot of them don't pack lunch. And they'll just look and see if anybody has anything extra, you know, maybe. And it's not because they don't have the resources. It's just they left the house without packing a lunch. And same thing with breakfast. A lot of kids wake up, rush out the door, aren't eating breakfast. And or they're keeping something simple like a muffin made with, you know, white flour and refined sugar, which nothing's wrong with that. You can eat that, but you're going to be hungry pretty soon after that. So if you're not packing lunch and you're eating that, you're going to be starving. And then you're going to come home and not be able to kind of control yourself, I guess, when you're eating, you know? And yeah. So my kids have opened my eyes to a lot of patterns, you know, that are out there for that I would say the everyday family is experiencing.
This really makes me think, which is one of my favorite things to talk about, if people have the ability to do it and however they can do it, is meal planning. So you take into account, you just mentioned the age range span, athletics or sports, and maybe somebody has a preference or an allergy that they're dealing with as well. So what is some of your guidance about how simple steps, tips that you can give when you are juggling a variety of different things, not just your own life as the adult, but also you're trying to manage quite a variety of things going on in your household. And I also, if you can include too, maybe the children's quote unquote responsibility in helping in some way, shape, or form, if there's the ability to do that, exposing them to things, whether it's culinary techniques or going shopping. Can you share a little bit about maybe how people can get started with managing their everyday family?
Yeah. So I would say first, think about what flavors that you mostly agree on as a family, and keep ingredients on hand that you know you can make something with that you will like, if that makes sense. Because I have to say, I don't take the time to meal plan often, but I will grocery shop with certain meals in mind that I know I can make this, this, or this. For example, chicken. Okay, I know I could make this, this, this. You know, I could marinate the chicken, or I could put it in a casserole, or I could cook it and shred it so that I have chicken salad, you know, stuff to make chicken salad. Because what's really hard is when you get home and you're like, I don't even have anything to start with, even though I want to make this, you know, and you might think you're going to run to the grocery store again and something comes up and you don't. So if you have the space, freezer space, for example, I have to say, Dina, I loved your live in your apartment. And I thought, I mean, I have had to work in a small kitchen before when we were displaced from our house fire, but it wasn't as small as your kitchen. So it's, again, there's all these nuances, right? So I can tell you that you can make things and freeze them. Whether it's breakfast sandwiches or pancakes or dinner. But if you don't have the freezer space, that's not a realistic recommendation. But if you have the space, I do recommend doing that. And having a list of recipes kind of in your back pocket, I would say, that you really like. That's what I do. So I have, and a lot of most, they're all on my website, actually. Recipes that I know, okay, I keep pesto in the freezer. I keep frozen vegetables, frozen fruit, because they could be good with smoothies. They could be put in stir fry. I keep chicken in my refrigerator and my freezer. And I keep cooked and uncooked in my freezer, because then I could just pull it out, you know, the night before in order to be able to cook it. Also pastas, rice, things that are shelf stable. If you have cabinet space, to keep that on hand also, so that you do have things to put together. But sometimes you're so busy and your mind is so full, you're thinking, what am I going to make? So that's why I recommend having a list of go-to recipes that you know your whole family will like and agree upon. So, and remind your kids, it doesn't have to be a big gourmet meal every single night. You know,
I agree with that. So, I was actually going to say that too, even for adults mm-hmm. as well. If you're flying solo, or you have two adults and or an empty nesters or whatever, you don't have to be making like a four course French meal and no. taking, you know, hours out of your day. Having things on rotation, I love that. Like, you know, it seems sometimes like we're eating the same things over and over again, but they're spaced out in a way that there's not repetition. So yeah. what I ate on Monday, I might eat again on Thursday, or I might have leftovers yeah. 2 days later, but I use them up, like you said, in a different way. Like maybe now I put them in my salad, where before I had them as the main meal. So, yeah. you know, allowing that flexibility, which is fantastic. Christy, I want to ask you for what, however you want to approach this, whatever, you know, thought process you're thinking of when I ask this question, but what are some of the hot topics or things that kind of either get under your skin or things that you enjoy talking about the most currently? Like what might be something that you're really passionate about or you feel like you need to inform people about?
Okay, so a few of them. One of them is about protein. So there is nothing wrong with protein powders, but most people can meet their protein needs without protein powders. I just want to clarify that, because I think with all the advertisement out there, there's an understanding, especially with teenagers, that you need to have protein powders. And again, there's nothing wrong with them and they're really convenient, which can be a really good thing, but you don't need it if there are ways to meet your protein needs without protein powders. So I just want to add that. And a lot, and so far, actually, in my recipes, I don't have a single one that it calls for them, except my energy bites, which I call bliss balls for a Google purpose. There is a variation that would include some protein powder. But aside from that, I do not. I will have some because people use them and I do think it's convenient, but most people can meet the protein needs without it. And the other thing is, most Americans, studies have shown, actually meet their protein needs daily, but they do not meet their fiber needs. And so one of my big soapboxes is fiber, how to incorporate more fiber into your meals, whether it's with whole grains, fruits and vegetables, chia seeds, flax, different things like that. Because I do think that's important for heart health, for digestive health. And I don't, in the whole time period we're in of protein, 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 don't forget about the fiber, fiber, fiber. So that's another one of my soapboxes. And then another one, which I talked to you a little bit about when we were first chatting, is what the term that's coined, NEAT, non-exercise activity thermogenesis. It's the energy we burn from just everyday movement, not counting intentional exercise. So I personally think that is one of the hugest things that is affecting our health as a country right now that is getting overlooked, because we know we hear we need to move more, but some of it, we're not doing it on purpose. You know, like when your kids are little, you're chasing them around the park, you're pushing them in strollers, you're automatically moving. And then as they get older, that movement is not there. And then, but as they get older and you're getting older, oftentimes we introduce more conveniences, which are very convenient, like robotic vacuums, pre-cut fruits and vegetables, but all of that is keeping us from standing and moving as much as we used to before we introduced those conveniences. So finding, and I know you're passionate about this, finding ways to move is so important. I mean, it's what our bodies are designed to do. But the more we're on our computers and phones and things like that, the less we're moving. And it's been really highlighted to me since I work from home now. After working in the hospital and taking stairs and being on my feet all day, I had a very high level of NEAT, where now I don't. And so I do exercise, but I did then also. And so to find ways to stay on my feet, which cooking in the kitchen does help, although I'm not walking that much, I am on my feet. That's just one of my soapboxes. I think it's really important for us all to be aware of and be intentional about.
Yes. I'm going to go back in time for a sec and let's define a few of those things for anybody listening. If you are unsure of what protein is, Christy and I will give you some examples, but literally everything has protein that you can probably think of in some shape or form. So Christy, what are your go-to protein sources?
So that's a good question. Even oats, like an oatmeal, will be protein, right? And chia seeds, also eggs, depending how many we have, right? chicken, for sure. Seafood. I would like to incorporate more seafood into our weekly schedule than I do, but whether it's tuna or salmon, and seafood is a great source of protein. I don't cook a whole lot with red meat because One, I've never liked it since I was little, but also my husband's family is a very strong heart history. So I do cook with it sometimes, but not so much. I typically would stick with ground turkey, like lean ground turkey, and milk. Yogurt skyr is very high in protein. So if you can add things to it to make it a little more palatable. And kefir. Yeah, there are a lot of, I could keep going.
That's what
a lot
I'm
of,
saying.
A lot of things have protein in it.
I do not know why.
Yeah.
I do not know why people freak out over how much protein you're getting. Like, girl, please sit down. There's tons of protein. You mentioned earlier tofu. So people who don't have tofu. Any soy issues can have tofu. Mm-hmm. Beans are a good protein, plant-based protein as well. If you don't mind, you know, a little bubble in your gut, and there's ways to work around that too.
Yeah.
So that brings me also to fiber discussion as well, Christy. So let's name some, I mean, fiber in this case could be everything that is not an animal would have some sort of fiber in it.
Some sort of fiber, yeah.
So what are your go-to fiber recommendations or fiber sources?
So whole grains, including oats, breads, again, chia seeds, nuts and seeds, fruits, fresh fruits, vegetables. I mean, even fresh fruits, you can put a whole, depending on the kind of blender you have, I put a whole apple with the skin on in the smoothie. I mean, there's berries. Yeah. Do you really want me to keep listing them? I can.
I was going to say, I'll add a couple more.
Yeah.
Avocado has
avocado. Actually, all
kinds
of
people
vegetables.
Don't think of this. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people think of fiber like, oh, I have to eat lettuce or broccoli. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but you could also eat really any plant item. And especially like Christy was just saying, if you include the skin on something or have it as a whole grain version, then that's a little bit more bang for your buck there. So one rule that we usually tend to tell people in the dietetics profession is introduce your fiber slowly if you've never had it before. And if you are introducing it as you increase fiber, increase fluid because you don't want your tummy to hurt.
Absolutely.
Or have constipation. And then I also, you know, when you were talking about the neat, the just the daily movements of move anything whenever you can, just get. So this is a perfect example. Today, I shared with you earlier before we started recording that I've been on my computer talking since 10 a.m. It's now almost coming upon 3 o'clock here. In between, right? So the 20 to 15 to 20 minutes that I've had, I've gotten up, I've moved around. Under normal circumstances, if I'm on in a meeting that I don't have to be on screen, if I'm attending a webinar, I'm standing up, like I'm at my counter, or I'll make sure that I jiggle my legs, something just to get the blood flowing so I'm not sitting there completely atrophied. So every little thing helps. Like if you are in corporate, you are at your desk, you're attending meetings, like try to maybe get a standing desk, walk around. I've shared this story plenty of times. When I used to work for the Department of Health, my whole department, I would say it's 10:30, time to move, and we would just get up and just bounce around. Like we just go around each other's cubicles and like do little squats and stretches, and that's it for maybe 5 to 10 minutes, get the blood flowing. So incorporating as much as you can throughout the day, in addition to any kind of like formal regimented exercise. We're talking about these little tiny things that you're not, you know, staying too sedentary. So I love these hot topics, your soapbox topics, Christy. I appreciate that. I'm keeping my eye on the time here, and I just want to find out from you if you can share a couple of things. Number one would be, what is a current or typical, if there is a typical, week in the life of you with everything that you have going on? What are some of the things that you have going on right now?
So recently my dad has not been well, and he lives on the other side of the country. So I've actually been traveling a lot recently to visit him for short trips. And so my weeks have not been typical lately, including this one. So I would say I try to designate certain days to be intentional with working and have goals set, at least in my mind. I might not write them out, of what I'm going to work on my website, when I'm going to do social media posts, things like that. Today we had an unexpected snow day. So, but I did get a lot of work done actually, but after this, after we wrap up here, I'll be playing in the snow with my 9-year-old. But typically I spend 3 to 4 days. I try to, working on my website and recipes. My next goal is to introduce a meal planning app where it will have all of my recipes in there, and you select the recipes to create your grocery shopping list and things like that, because I've been asked over the years for meal plans, but I personally don't develop them for people because I could spend hours developing something that I think sounds amazing, and then I'm going to give it to you and you're going to pay for it and you're going to think, I don't need half these things, or we don't like these things, or whatever the case is. So I really don't want to tell you what to eat, but I want to have a resource there for you. And I do have my website, but a lot of people want the convenience of an app. So that's, I want to have enough of a selection that I feel like its value is worth buying the app. So that's what's keeping me driven right now, to get more recipes on there and update some of my old recipes so that I feel like I have the value to move forward with initiating the app. So that's been what I've been working on.
And with as much as you have going on in your personal and professional life, are there things, do you lead and live by example in the wellness world? Like, are you taking care of yourself as well these days?
I do my absolute best. I do also believe in getting adequate sleep, which I have been very consistent about. Also taking care of, so in my situation, I have reflux, and with things going on with my dad's health, and I mentioned my daughter's ACL surgery, I just, with increased stress, my symptoms were increased. So I gave up caffeine and I gave up a lot of chocolate. So yes, I think I do, at least that's my goal. Not only for myself and my own health, because that is why we implement things, even with young kids who, I should add too, that I do not believe that body size equals health. So no matter what size your body is, you should take care of your health. Even if you're in quote unquote good health, you still have a future ahead of you, and you want to protect that. So I do my best to do that for myself and set an example for my kids, because kids are watching, you know? So yeah, I'd like to think that I do. I'm not perfect, definitely not perfect, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anybody is, and I really encourage people not to be. Like,
yeah, true, true. Yeah.
Live in the fun, fluid parts. But also, if you have some non-negotiables, like this is February as we're recording this, this is Heart Health Month. A lot of my discussions have been around both the physical and the emotional heart, and making sure that we show ourselves love and compassion and prioritizing ourselves. And sometimes it just feels like it's not doable, especially if you are juggling many responsibilities and a family and working from home, and there's things are just bleeding into each other. Before you know it, you're like, where did the time go? Where did the day go? How is it already mid-February? Or whatever the case may be. And making sure that you have given yourself some love in some way regularly, not just because it's like a day to pamper yourself, but you know, sleep is just as important as going to the nail salon to treat yourself or a mani-pedi, even more so with that. I want to also, you mentioned a little bit kind of about the app and stuff. Where is the future you heading? What do you think you're shifting into? What are you focusing more into?
That is a really good question. So I'm not completely sure. Like I said, with the app, that's my first thing. I would love to monetize my website to be able to make some money, because that's where I spend my time and my resources on. And then I have thought about reaching out to our pediatrician's office. And also I've been in touch with a local counselor, because a lot of our clients, and I know you talk about this too, we are not counselors. So we will often refer out to them. Well, vice versa too. They have patients that could use a dietitian. So I was in touch with one recently, and she asked if I was comfortable to give her my information for people to reach out. So that is probably my next endeavor, is to start letting people know that I will do one-on-one counseling. But I do, like I said, you've mentioned in your other podcasts, it's important to know your scope. So I like the idea of people just touching base to see if we're even a good fit before moving forward. And it's really hard to define the population that I'm comfortable seeing, because I do have a lot of experience with a whole variety of people and populations and different disease states. But I also know what I'm not comfortable with. But I can't really categorize it. I can't say, oh, don't send me people with GI health, because actually there's certain conditions I'm very comfortable with and other ones I'm not. So I don't know how to market that. Kind of like when you said you started blogging, you did, you know, recipes, and you did restaurant reviews. Like, it's really helpful to have a niche and define that pretty specifically. So I'm in that process, because right now, outside of my website, I need to figure that one out.
Yeah. And it's okay. It's okay to think as you go. So, you know, what Chrissy is talking about too, when it comes to like specializing in things, even in the field of dietetics, we are considered a specialist as a healthcare provider, because we specialize in nutrition. And, you know, a lot of your generalists, your doctors, your primary care physicians do not get the training that we do. So we definitely want to be there for you. But then there are subspecialties too, where somebody might have pediatrics or renal dietitians who work with people with kidney diseases or GI gastrointestinal specialties. And so, Christy, I mean, for me, I feel like more of a generalist in my world. I feel like I could probably touch upon a little bit of everything depending on who comes to me. I don't feel comfortable with very young children. I know that. So I think sometimes it's learning as you go of what does not feel good for you to be in, that maybe that'll start falling off the list. And so it doesn't have to be super specific if you don't want it to, at least for now. Maybe, yeah. You know, if we, like, the best case scenario is I'm too busy with everybody, then we can start focusing in
true.
On, I just work true. With women named Brenda who are 37 yeah. and they go to Pilates. Like, then I'll start fine tuning it. But for now, it's yeah. like whoever wants to meet with me. And even then too, I think you might agree with this, you know, thank goodness if people do come to me and I turn them away, I can at least give them referrals to somebody. I can say, here's where right. I think you might need to go and what the questions you might need to ask. I'm definitely not the person for you, but this is my recommendation. So at least they've stopped along the way at the middle person here to guide them.
Yeah.
Chrissy, is there anything that we haven't discussed or anything that I haven't asked you that you can think about that you might want to share with our listeners?
I think my last tip that I would say, encourage people to not forget, is to use logic. You know, I think there's so much information out there. I should do this. I shouldn't do that. I can eat this. I can't eat that. But use logic, you know, use logic with your meal times. If you, you know, don't feel like eating in the morning and you know you're not going to eat again until 2 o'clock, have a little something, you know, just don't forget the logic piece and listen to your body because it tells you a lot. So
I appreciate that. I feel like, especially with people who want to engage in these, you know, quote unquote, healthy behaviors, I think they feel like they need to follow a lot of rules, like don't eat past a certain time or start off your meal within the first 30 minutes. And it doesn't have to be those hard, fast things. And I also appreciate what you said too, that even if there are things that you can't necessarily recognize in your own hunger or fullness cues, you still need to nourish yourself. You don't want to be passing out from hunger. You don't want to deplete your energy stores when you're moving around a lot throughout the day or working and, you know, moving around physically and mentally, having to stay focused. So definitely keep yourself as nourished as possible and enjoy the fun things too. Okay. Yeah. Christy, it is time for my final two questions, which are my food pun intended related questions, which is what is on your plate today? You mentioned a little bit about the snow playing outside. Yeah. So when we're done, what is the next thing you plan to do? And then what is the next meal that you think you might be eating?
Okay, so yes, my 9-year-old cannot wait to get out in the snow. So I told her I would play with her there. And then I'm hoping to work a little bit on my email for my website. So that's my last bit of work I want to do today. And then I need to get my husband a Valentine's Day card still. But anyways, and then as far as what's on my plate, you know, I said I keep things handy that I knew I wanted to make. And my husband was taking care of the snow this morning. And he's like, I'd like to grill tonight. Can we have something for dinner that I can grill? I said, perfect. I'm going to marinate. I have a lemon pepper chicken marinade. So I'm going to do that. And I have avocado. So I'm going to make some guacamole and chips. And I have a pineapple to cut up. So we're going to have fresh fruit salad. So we're going to have grilled chicken. We're going to have a summer meal. Grilled chicken, chips and guac, and a fresh fruit salad. So that's what's for dinner tonight.
I don't eat meat, but you just talked about a lot of things and my stomach literally started growling as you were talking. So either that is a sign that I need to go eat something too, or you just made me really hungry. I'm like, oh, chips and guac sounds really good. Like I said, our snow didn't accumulate much here, so maybe I'll venture out and go pick something up in the realm of Mexican food or something. We'll see.
Yeah.
You just inspired me, whatever it was. Chrissy, it has been a real pleasure getting to learn more about you and also so many insightful tips and information. Obviously, I will be including all of your resources, your website, your Instagram page in the notes of this podcast episode. And it was really so, so wonderful to get to know you. Thank you so much for being on here.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. This is great.
Thank you so much for joining me this week on the Dish with Dina podcast. I am Dina D'Alessandro, registered dietitian, nutritionist, founder, and chief executive life changer at Dish with Dina, and I'm also your host. If you like what you heard, I would be so grateful if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and share this with others who you think might benefit from what we have to offer on these episodes. You can also join my mailing list at dishwithdina.com or email me at info@dishwithdina.com with questions, comments, feedback, and if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, because everybody eats and we all have a story to share. I hope you tune back in next week when we dish again.